This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, you're listening to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio with me, Deb Wolf, and we've had a busy week. We had a pug become the best dog. The best dog, really? Is that dog the best dog? Well, he's the best of his breed when he won the New York City title, and then he won the National American title for the best of best, really. The best dog is a pug. Go figure. Okay, now I don't want to be sarcastic about the pug because, I mean, the pugs are wonderful. They are. And everybody loves them. And they're kind of an acquired habit, you know. Once you've spent some time with one, you can't help but notice how likable they are, how affectionate they are, how eager they are, and cheerful and happy. I'm just going to read you a little bit of a breed description. So it says that pugnacious and individualistic, this vibrant breed is extremely tough and opinionated. It is independent and resolute. Okay, I would call that stubborn. It knows what it wants, and it stands its ground until it is satisfied. Again, stubborn. Its muscular, compact body, flat face, and unblinking stare give it a strong presence and personality. Although it is a strong-willed and forceful, like I say, stubborn, it is rarely aggressive. Affectionate with its human family, it makes an amusing, rewarding companion. Okay, that's true. Now, they kind of have the pushed-in face, and they're a very small dog with a curly-cute tail. They're usually sort of a beigey color with a blackish ears and muzzles. You'll know them. They look like a regular dog who kind of, a chunky, squat, portly, strong dog, little dog that ran into a wall, right? They got that squish face. Okay, so this is their breed history. They're miniaturized from Mastiffs. Mastiffs! You know those big giant dogs with the big droopy jowls, and they're like the biggest, heaviest dogs next to Great Danes and Irish Wolfhounds that you could have, like giants. Okay, so that's what they came from in the Far East 2,400 years ago. That Buddhist priest bred them, and they introduced them to Holland in the 1500s via the Dutch East India Company. So the dog became the companion of aristocrats and kings. Now, pugs now are the companion of many people who live in apartments because they're small and cute and they like everybody. They're a good pick for a store. If you want to have a dog that greets people in a store, oh, they don't want to go anywhere. They don't want to cause trouble. And they love the meet and greet. That's kind of what they live for. So pugs are a good bet for a lot of people. They're really good with children. If you have children who have special needs and are not, you can't guarantee that they'll always be careful and gentle, then the pug might be a little small. Even though it's sturdy and of the smallest dogs, it's the most able to handle a bit of a wrestle match with kids. It still can get stepped on. It still is breakable. You would want something a lot bigger and hardier for special needs kids who are a little rough sometimes. But if you have kids who can be gentle, a pug is a good bet because they really are sturdy, sort of like beagles and bassets, but easier to own, I would say. Except, and here's the big exception. So a little while ago last year, I guess the pointer won the best of the best of the best. And I was telling you all about why you don't want to get a pointer. And I get a lot of flack for that from pointer lovers. How dare you say this, that, and the other? But the thing is, none of them said I was wrong. They said what I said about punters was right. They just find those things likable. So what I said about pointers is that the German short-haired pointer is a hunting dog, a working dog, a sporting dog. If you're a couch potato person, it's not the dog for you. It'll be noisy and race around your house and yard and irritate everyone and be eager for escape because it needs a really, really solid workout. A stroll in the park is not enough for that dog. So the pug, interestingly, is at the opposite end of that. So the pointer barely needs the vet at all, has no health problems, is an extreme athlete. The reason he's hard work for most owners is the exercise component. He's bright. He's always thinking. He's always looking for birds. He wants to flush out birds, chase birds. Not so handy in a city park, right? So that's the pointer. Now the pug, on the other hand, oh, he's great in the city park. He's not going to chase anything. He's going to be super friendly with everybody. Everyone's going to love him. When they say, "Can I pet your dog?" your answer is going to be, "Of course." You know, all good there. But if you get a pug, please consider getting veterinary medical insurance. Oh yeah, they can be costly little creatures. So, well, and if you're a person who travels a lot and you want to take your dog with you a lot in the cabin or in a little cage or whatever, or fly it on planes, you probably don't want a dog with a squished-in face, because those dogs are not allowed to fly in summer, and there's all kinds of rules on it because they do have harder time adjusting to pressure changes. And so traveling for them is not as safe as for the long-nosed dogs. So that's one thing I want you to really consider before getting a pug. If you want to travel a lot by airplane and you want to have a pug, it's probably not the best idea. You'd probably be better with, I don't know, a cockapoo or some other small dog with a normal shaped nose, not a bred to be squished nose. Okay, bred to be squished. That doesn't sound very technical, but you know what I'm talking about. And with that comes a bunch of things. So this is why you need the vet insurance if you get a pug. First of all, they do have ear problems a lot. So you got to keep those ears clean, and you got to be on a maintenance program, and you don't want to let him get infected. And it's a bit of a bother. Now, there's lots of dogs like that. You know, lots of dogs need their ears cleaned out, especially the retrievers who spend so much time in the water. When they come out of the water, you got to dry their ears. You got to make sure they're not sporting some kind of village inside there of tiny creatures and keep it clean. And one tip I've got for that is two parts apple cider vinegar and one part hydrogen peroxide. That's the mix. So you make that liquid and you just squirt it in the ear of the dog who swims all the time, who has those musky, stinky ears. And after you might want to use ear wash. I don't know how bad your ears are, and clean it out nicely with Q-tips or wipes, baby wipes, or if that's not necessary and you're just doing preventative, squirt some of this solution in the air and it will dry it all out. So that's one solution for the dogs who have dirty, dirty ears. But the pugs usually don't swim, and it's more of a situation that has to do with their skin. And that's the big thing, do-do-do-do, with pugs. They get chronic problems in the folds of their skin. So if you look at a pug's face, you see all these wrinkles, right? It's very cute. Same with a Shar Pei. There's quite a few dogs with these wrinkly faces. Well, those get little yeast infections in the folds. Yeah. So there's a lot of cleaning and wiping and worrying going on with these little dogs. So you do have to be aware of that. You don't want a pug that reeks from fungus infections in its ears and its skin and is always scratching. And no, you have to take care of them. So if you're not the kind of person that's interested in that, you should pick a mutt or a cross that is the size you want and the attitude you want when you go to the shelter, but doesn't have a squished in face and doesn't have lots of wrinkles, and you'll be spending a lot less. On the other hand, if you want that pug personality, you gotta get a pug. All right, everybody, we're gonna go to break and come back and talk a little more about dogs and cats on Animal Party Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello, you're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. And I was reading the other day how these people found these kittens in their backyard. Oh, so cute. and I see the picture and I look at them and I think, those don't look like kittens. Those really don't look like kittens. So they found these kittens and they put, actually it wasn't in the paper, it was social media and it was online, and they were looking to rehome them, these two kittens. And so I contacted them, and then it turns out the newspaper did find these people, and they did go over and do a story on it. These kittens that they found in their backyard were not kittens. They were two bobcat kittens. Yeah, that's right. So they go out one day, and in this little window where their basement is, they hear this meowing, and they look, and they're these two gray tabbies, adorable. One's twice the size of the other, but they're still tiny. They just open their eyes. They're just babies. So they post on Facebook, does anyone know how to take care of newborn kittens? I respond, yes, I can come over. I can show you how to bottle feed them, blah, 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 blah. By the time they answer me back a few days later, they've already figured out. They took him to the vet, and the vet was like, oh no, these are not cats. I'm sorry, miss, but these are bobcats. We don't want to have anything to do with them. So they ended up taking them to a rescue place, Critter Care, where they take care of bobcat kittens. Because, you know, raising a bobcat is not like raising a domestic cat. And you certainly wouldn't want to have one in your kitchen. So, so I thought that was interesting. But they sure do look like kittens when they're small. Very hard to tell them apart. Some of the canines are like that, too, when they're puppies. Very hard to tell between certain foxes and coyotes and different types of canines when they're very, very young. Very hard to tell. You can tell pretty quickly once they start to grow, though, that's for sure. And a bobcat is not going to behave like a domestic kitten. As much as we think of our cats as semi-feral or close to nature, they are so far removed from a bobcat. Really, really they are. So if you are thinking of adopting wildlife, you really should think twice about it, or three times, four times. Even the most friendly little critter, like a monkey or a koala, or koala is a bad example, but a bobcat or a raccoon, any of these animals might be friendly when they're tiny. But when they go through maturity, there's a change. And then when they go through sexual maturity, there's another change. And sometimes, like with wolves, there's a change at about 7 or 8 years old. So you got to be prepared for that, that the animal you think of as your little baby and you're kissing and cuddling and babying, at some point, it can get very aggressive very fast. So you really want to leave these rescued baby animals to the rescuers, and don't buy one. You know, there's people who go away and they buy these exotic pets from other countries, and they're so overrepresented in the shelters when they get older. As soon as they get to maturity, these animals act out. Because they're really not meant to be domestic pets in houses. They're meant to be with other members of their species in a natural environment. So you don't want to do that to them. All right. I want to talk about dog smarts. Since we talked about the pointer and we talked about the pug. And I'm kind of going to relay it a little bit to cats as well. Because sometimes I get asked these questions. I think recently I got asked, are orange tabbies more trainable than other cats? And that seems to be, I kind of thought that was interesting. So I went online and found that there's this online myth out there that any orange cat can be trained for commercials. It's funny because it's not true. It's just not true. No, there are some orange cats who can be trained for commercials. Yeah. And I find tabbies easy to work with personally, but I can't point to any science to that. I mean, there is a geneticist cat expert who has told me that the colors of a cat and personality traits genetically are in some cases linked. So in other words, every cat who has this specific marking of this cat breed has this specific personality trait. And every cat who has that specific marking has that trait. But there's not very many, and we don't really know what they are. So to say all orange cats are going to be willing to perform is not correct. If you want to find a cat that would perform and you go to a shelter and you're looking at them, try and see who's reacting to you. Who bring a toy. And if the cat isn't interested in the toy at all, it could be that the environment is just creating a cat that wants to hide, as it would in a shelter. But the thing is, a movie set, a TV set, a training situation, a performance situation, unless you're just doing it for social media in your home, is stressful and loud. So if the cat recoils into itself and hides in a busy shelter, it's probably going to do the same on a TV set. So you want the cat that's highly interactive anyway, that is playing with you anyway, that is dying for attention. Now, that cat makes a lousy pet if you're not home a lot, or if you don't want to interact with it, that is the worst choice. But if you want a cat that's going to work and do tricks, that's the cat you want. And you can even try to teach it a trick right then and there, even without opening the cage door. You can reach your finger in and stroke it in a way it would like maybe just behind the eye, between the ear and the eye, just with your fingertip, and say something like, come, and then stop. And then go to the other side of the cage and put your finger in and say, come. And if the cat comes, he's a listener and he's a learner and he's sharp and he's able to think in stressful places. So that would be a good cat. If he's also playing with the toy that you've brought and he's not overly reactive to the other animals in the shelter, that would be a good one to pick, regardless of his color. Okay, so now I want to talk about dog intelligence just a little bit. But we're going to go to break and come back and talk about who's smarter, a pointer or a pug. You have to listen to find out. Stay tuned on Animal Party Pet Life Radio.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Live life unleashed.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello. We're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. Who is smarter, a pointer or a pug? Do you think you know the answer? Well, it kind of depends on the individual animal, somewhat, because in all the years I've been training dogs, and it's a long time now, I met a brilliant Irish setter. One brilliant Irish setter. I've met a whole lot of Irish setters that you think, is anybody home? Nobody's home. But one was brilliant. So there's always the exception to the rule. And so you could, in fact, get a very, very smart pug. You could. Is it likely? No, it's not likely. You could spend days teaching your pug its name. and then you will understand why I say it's not likely. Now, different smarts and different skills, right? There's different ways of measuring intelligence. So like if you take the example of children, a kid who can fix his own bicycle is smart in a different way than a kid who reads quickly. And a kid who can figure out, like a baby, how to get out of a playpen is smart in a different way than the kid who knows how to act so winning and cute that you pick him up out of the playpen. Okay, so it's sort of hard to measure, okay, who's smarter? Well, they both got their way, right? One escaped and one charmed you, but they both got their way. So in terms of dogs, there's a book called The Intelligence of Dogs, written by my friend and colleague, Professor Dr. Stanley Coren. He's a psychology professor. And he wrote this whole book where they tested all different breeds and they tried to determine who's the smartest dog. And they tested them different ways. So escape, ability to escape was one. Ability to remember was another. Ability to remember long chains of things. So not just like sit, but a command, like go get that, bring it back, this sort of thing, like chains of commands, just different ways of testing, adaptive intelligence, reactive intelligence, independent intelligence, like can they think on their own? Can they solve a problem by themselves? And you might think, well, no animal can. Oh, wrong. If animals couldn't solve problems by themselves, none of them would survive. They're very good problem solvers. And the adaptive intelligence of a coyote is extreme. So is a raccoon. So is an orangutan. I mean, they make people look like dummies. So when it comes to solving problems, so which is smarter, a pointer or a pug? Well, if you're talking about which is smarter at finding birds, the pointer. Which is smarter at seeing movement, which is more alert to movement, the pointer. Which is more adept at predicting where things will move and giving chase, the pointer. Who is better at retrieving? The pointer. But does that make the pointer smarter? Well, a dog trainer like me thinks so. But to most people, who's better at manipulating in social situations? The pug. Absolutely. The pointer's like that hyper kid who gets kicked out of class for shouting out a turn, "I know, I know, I know," when it's not his turn, while the pug sits there pretty, pretty, pretty till the teacher calls on him. So who's smarter? It's kind of tough to tell, isn't it? Yeah. Who would make a better pet? If you're a long-distance runner, a cyclist, someone who loves to play ultimate frisbee and need someone to retrieve your frisbees while you practice throwing. I mean, yeah, the pointer. If you're just a regular person who just wants a friendly, happy dog that you don't have to walk every day, maybe you could just, maybe one walk a day or a little visit to a park or a parkette would be fine. Well, then you need a pug. So there's a dog out there for everybody. And I even think there's a cat out there for everybody. If you can find the right match, then you'll be rewarded every day, that's for sure. So the longest, I thought this was kind of interesting. There was a cat, Stewie, a gray tabby, Maine Coon, and he was from Nevada. And he actually measured 48.5 inches long. That's like more than 4 feet. That is very, very big cat, okay? Big cat. Big, big cat. So if you think, well, I like cats, but I like bigger pets. No, you can have a Maine Coon. They're huge. And it's kind of interesting to think about the variation in the cat world and the dog world. We've been breeding them for so long that we've really made, it's startling. You know, when you take like the smallest hairless cat and you compare it to a big shaggy Maine Coon, or you take the smallest tiny teacup poodle or teacup Yorkie or toy Yorkie or whatever, and you compare it to the Great Dane or the Mastiff, it's amazing what we've been able to do. Amazing. And amazing how quickly it happens, how quickly you can create. You know, there's new breeds being created all the time. And pretty fascinating how quickly it can happen. But then you think about with people, there's often families, like my family or my children. One of my children, same parents, and one of my children is 5 feet tall, my daughter. And my other child, my son, is over 6'3", same parents. So, you know, if he meets a tall woman and has children with her, the likelihood that they would have tall babies is huge. And if she meets a tall man and has children with him, the likelihood that they would have small, shorter babies is huge. And yet the genetics is similar. So it's pretty fascinating to think how quickly we can do that with cats and dogs. And that's partly because they breed so often, which is a good thing and a bad thing. A cat or dog, well, a dog can have puppies twice a year and 10 or so easily. And all of those can then make puppies and over and over and over and over. And it's not healthy for her. The healthiest thing for a dog, if she's going to have puppies for a female dog, a dam, is to wait until she's 2, have one litter, wait a full year, have another litter, perhaps wait a full year, have another litter, and then finish. That is a normal, modern type of schedule for a breeding female. And each and every time when she has her pups, she'd be seen by a veterinarian, and the owner would get the okay to breed her again at some point before doing it again a year later. So she's getting regular maintenance and vaccines and checkups. She's going in and getting seen when her pups are getting vaccinated when they're 6 to 8 weeks old and 4 weeks later and 4 weeks later. So she's really monitored well. And if the vet says, you know what, I don't think you should breed her again, you don't, right? And if he says, sure, she's healthy and absolutely, wait a year and do it again. And that's what you do. So if you let an intact male dog and an unspayed female dog breed naturally as much as they want over and over and over, you're really wearing her out. You're really making her prone to problems, even just nutritionally. It's such a hard thing for a female dog to nurse puppies. It's so depleting of all her nutrients. And you have to feed them so much when they're pregnant, and especially when they're nursing, especially after about 2 weeks when the pups are getting bigger and they're really taking in a lot of nutrition. So it's really not advisable to do it that often. Now, with cats, The problem with cats is even worse because they can breed continuously. They can have a litter, and then even while nursing that newborn litter, they can go into heat again and get pregnant again. And most owners don't realize that. Most owners think, oh, God, I waited too long to spay her, and now she had her litter, but I guess I have a few months to worry about it. No, you do not. You need to get her in soon, soon. You need to call the vet and make the appointment, and he or she will tell you when the ideal time is. With dogs, you want to avoid their heat by a month. Okay, now here's a tricky thing. Why? And this is what most people don't even know this, but if you spay a dog, so you have her altered, so she'll never have babies again. If you do that when she's in heat, or right before she's in heat, or right after she's had pups, too close. If you do it too close, then you can have a thing where she still biologically will manifest all the symptoms of a dog in heat every 6 months for the rest of her life, which is terrible. It's messy, but it's also all the boy dogs want her, and there's fights and there's kerfuffle, and you just don't want this. I mean, you spay your dog, you don't want to deal with it again. It should be over. So make sure the timing is really clear. When you call that vet and you say, hey, my cat just had kittens. When can I bring her in for spay? Probably the receptionist will say, oh, just a minute, I'll get back to you, because they really should check. It's not the next appointment. It's when is the ideal time for spay? And then you bring her in when it's the time. You don't delay. You get it done. Because it's really going to help her in the long run. It's going to make her life so much easier and smoother and better. She will not be the subject of cat fights. She will not have to escape to find a mate compelled by nature to do so. She will not be wandering the streets looking for trouble every couple of months. And she will not be making the so many unwanted cats that we have in the world right now. So one boy cat and one girl cat and one boy cat in 5 years can make 11,000 new cats. That's how many. So, you see these people on the news where they bust a hoarder and they go in and there's all these cats, and you think, how did they let it get that way? It really doesn't take long. Okay. So that guy's two cats became 10 in 6 months. And then everybody bred again. Now you got about 60. Seriously, that's how many. Because everybody bred, right? And everybody had 10 litters. So, no, you've just got to spay and neuter. That's the way to go, everybody. All right, I'm coming to the close of the show. And I want to just direct you again to Deb Wolf, Pet Expert on Facebook, where I've been posting some funny things lately and some great information about cats and dogs. And if you want to get a training demo and you want to see how to train a cat to sit or a dog to come or anything you'd like with pets, check out Deb Wolf, Pet Expert on YouTube. I hope you'll go there. And as always, I'd love to get your questions, your comments, your pet problems. You can send me a voice clip, or you can type it or text it any which way. Just send it to deb@petliferadio.com. And we'll get your question answered on the air. And if you'd like to come on and talk to me about it, then please send us your contact information, because we will call you. We'll do it so it's not live, so you don't have to stress out about that. And we'll just call you and have a conversation, and then later we can play it on the air. So all the people with the same problem can get their cat or dog problem solved at the same time. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. From me, Deb Wolf, Animal Party and Pet Life Radio. Be good to your animals. Ciao, meow.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.